Hey, I'm Bob Runkle, and for as long as I can remember, I've loved pop culture. Despite the challenges I've faced in my life, pop culture has always been there for me. I love talking to people and being a platform for others to share their thoughts, stories. Because if there's one thing I never get tired of, it's seeing driven, talented, and inspiring individuals follow their dreams, no matter what obstacles are in their way. And I know a thing or two about that. Welcome to the DJ Bob Show. I'm DJ Bob. Roll it.
DJ Bob Show. 2024 begins now. My first interview of the year and my first interview after COVID. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. We talk a little bit about that in the episode. But today, we're joined by the multi-talented John McDaniel. He's a composer, orchestrator, band leader, all-around great guy. He kind of rose to fame as Rosie's sidekick on the hit daytime show, The Rosie O'Donnell Show, from 1996 to 2002. And he's done so much before and since. We talk all about the creative stuff, and we talk about life. It's a beautiful conversation, and this one is a long time coming. Get excited and grab a good seat. Because here's our chat with John McD. Enjoy. What is something that you wish people knew about you and what you do? Because I'm sure there's a lot of misconceptions because you do a lot of stuff.
That is true. I do a lot of stuff. I don't know what misconceptions there may be, actually, but I do pride myself in doing a variety of things in my life. So family means a lot to me. Friends I've known forever that I keep in touch with. I called just today, earlier, a friend from high school who I haven't connected with in a while and left a message. Because I think those relationships that people you've known forever, they really know you, you know,
and they shape you.
Yeah. And they've really been through stuff, you know, with you and apart from you, but you kind of can't fake that. And a lot of, I have made some new friends in the last year. And that's very nice too, but it's the friends that you've had forever that kind of keep you grounded that you have the inside jokes with that you try very hard to remember as you get older. So that's important to me. The music work that I do, the concerts that I do, mean a lot to me. I'm lucky in that I, perform with a lot of mostly Broadway kind of folks all around the country, from Connecticut to Tennessee to Los Angeles, New York, Florida. And that work that I do with some of these sublime artists really means a lot to me. And I'm still also writing. I wrote a new song this morning called Time that I'm excited about. And working on some new musicals that are hopefully headed to the big Broadway. But you know, you just do your work. And if the stars align and everything happens, those shows make it to New York, I'll be thrilled. It's just a lot of moving parts.
You know? For sure.
Yeah. But it's, you know, I think the variety of work that I do keeps me feeling energized and young and busy and happy. When people ask me, how are you? I often say I'm busy and happy, because that is actually, if you distill it down, that's kind of who I am. And also I build in enough time for myself to not be working all the time. For example, January is pretty light, you know, but I'll be prepping for things that are coming up in February and March and April, and I'm pretty booked until October at this point. So that, you know, for an old guy, that makes me pretty happy.
I've been doing this podcast for over 14 years now.
Whoa.
Since I was 15. And the thing that I am amazed by is how many people are using the digital medium since the pandemic. So what was your learning curve? Like, what surprised you about working in this space?
Wow. So to be honest, I hadn't had a lot of experience. Before the pandemic, a director with whom I was about to work on a show said, oh, I'd like to have a Zoom meeting with all these people. And I thought, a what? No, I didn't know what she was talking about.
I didn't either.
I thought, oh, you mean I have to like brush my hair and put on a shirt and like be like a person? So I'd had a little bit of experience, but man, you know, when the pandemic hit, all of a sudden we're all home and we're hungry for collaborators and friends. Yeah. And seniors. And we made it work. We did the best we could. I produced a musical that I'd written called Sticks and Stones. And it wound up being a benefit for Broadway Cares. And we had Audra McDonald and Javier Munoz and George Salazar and some wonderful performers be a part of it. And, you know, people were hungry to do work and to make art. So we did the best we could. And I started a sort of a regular Facebook broadcast of a thing I called Sunday Tea with John McDee. And it kind of got me back to the piano and singing, which I hadn't in a long
time. Watched it every week.
Oh, good. I started out doing weekly for 7 weeks, and I thought, this is exhausting. So then I went monthly, and that was really happy making, because I was able to, you know, my parents were able to see it and friends, and I'm happy you saw it. I got to sing and play a lot of some original stuff, but a lot of songs that I'd loved forever. And so that was really fun. So, you know, we kept busy, and I learned how to work in Logic, which is a Mac
That's
music.
That's what I use. Yeah.
You do. Yeah. So, you know, and I had never, I'd had friends who had, you know, done it, and I just never really had time. And all of a sudden, what did I have? Time. So I learned that, and I got kind of good in iMovie, and that was, you know, those are skills that I continue to use and have at my disposal, which is pretty great. The thing I didn't really do that I should have done is learn how to play the guitar. I'm so mad. I should have just clicked on Amazon and had one delivered and learned. I just did a show last month with someone who was playing the guitar, and I thought, oh God, it's not too late, by the way.
No, never.
But yeah, it was an interesting time, wasn't it?
And, you know, when I was doing this, everybody was home. So right. People started to take podcasts more seriously.
Yeah.
And internet work more seriously, and collaborating over the internet more seriously. So, I mean, thinking back to when you and I first connected, we were going to use Skype or something like that.
Right.
That was because I was teaching you how to use Skype the first time around.
Amazing.
And that, look how far we've come. And
indeed,
you can create full productions and
yep,
quality content with yep, this stuff.
It's true. It's exciting. I'm actually embarking on a new recording. I work with a singer in London named Barb Younger, and she's really talented and really wonderful. And we've had a long collaboration over the last many years, probably about as long as you've been doing the podcast. And she and I she'll come over to America and we'll do shows over here. And I will go over to the UK and we'll do shows over there in London and all around the UK, actually. And I'll be there again with her in May. But And we've made a couple of recordings of a collection of the Beatles and a collection of Sting, where we take the songs apart and put them back together again and sort of do our own riff on some beautiful songs. And so we have decided, I'm announcing it here, this is an exclusive.
Perfect.
Exclusive. Also, if I say it, I have to do it. So we are going to make a holiday record that will come out probably in, you know, October, November.
Would love to have you guys back on for that.
Oh, yeah, good. We'll do it.
To talk about that.
So we've just sort of committed to doing it. And we're going to do it long distance. I'm going to create the tracks here at home in Florida, and Barb will sing, you know, in the UK, and I'll fly her vocals in and my vocals in, and we're going to experiment with one song. We haven't chosen it yet. We're inches away from choosing it. We're going to do, just to make sure that we are not crazy, that we can actually do this and make it sound good. And I think we can. So, cause usually we're in the same room when we do our things and we riff off of each other and we, you know, using our ears and kind of make things that way. So this will be a little bit of a different experience.
Latency doesn't help either.
I say it again. Oh, latency. No. Well, that's why it'll have to be done in this specific way, in that we will work on it together on the phone and we'll kind of have a sense, but we won't really ever sing it together. Then I will make the track, send it to her, and she'll play the track back. And she's got a great mic at home, and so do I. And so we'll do our vocals individually, and then I can move them around, and I can say, we have 75% of it, but this other 25 we need to redo, or let's try this, or, you know, so we'll be creating it in a different new way, and that's going to be fun. And then it'll be released and on Spotify before you know it.
So what is your home studio setup like? What are you working with?
I have a Kurzweil keyboard that I plug directly into my Mac. And I have a couple of different mics that I use. And
you don't need a crazy busy setup anymore.
You don't. You really don't. It's kind of amazing. I think simple is good. Barb and I keep things simple when we work together live. It's just me on piano and our two voices. So we can do that. We can do that pretty easily. And I might add a few little fun things as we go along. I've done some kind of extensive tracks for things in the last couple of years. I don't think I'll go too crazy, but we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm a sucker for all things Christmas.
Me too.
And holiday. And it's kind of unfortunate because this past Christmas, I had COVID. So that was a wrench.
I'm sorry.
Our whole family had it at once. So we were like, okay, we're done. We're done with this.
That's good. I'm glad. A couple of years ago, I was supposed to go home for Christmas and Omicron was just sort of hitting. And at the last minute, I decided not to go. And we all decided to just stay home and not potentially infect our parents who were much older. And so it was sad, but we wound up doing Christmas in March, 3 months later. And it was just fine. Like it's whenever you do it is good. So
yeah, we did it a week or so later, so it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, good. Good.
But one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, because if I didn't talk to you about it, it would kind of just be like people would probably kill me for it. But one of the pivotal shows of my childhood was Rosie, because...
Oh, good.
Because as a kid... In a wheelchair, I couldn't really play outside as a kid.
Uh-huh.
But I loved Broadway, and I loved pop culture, and I loved weird, eccentric comedy, and that checked all the boxes.
Well, then, that was the perfect show for you.
One of my dear friends was one of your writers, Alan Cax.
Oh, my God, Alan. I love Alan. I see him still in Connecticut when we connect. His son has worked at the O'Neill during my conference of cabaret and performance. We have so much fun together, and Alan is just great.
So I kind of want to go into specific
sure
things about Rosie that you don't really get asked about in specifics, if you can remember.
I can try. Shoot me a question.
So what was it like when you all traveled to Sesame Street for one show?
That was great. It was a kind of a dream come true. I've heard people say, you know, somebody will get a chance to go and be on Sesame Street for one episode. And it is life-changing because we have been watching that show. Was with me from the time I was a kid, right? So those characters and that environment, that sort of simple and sweet and yet real environment was really meaningful. And it was great to be there on the set and, you know, working with them. Hello. And oh my gosh, I love it. That's great. That's great. Yeah, we had the best time. It was a wonderful, wonderful. Actually, I think we were up there a couple of days. I remember going up a couple of days. We shot them. But it was great fun.
Rosie's connection with Kevin and Elmo. Come on.
I know.
What's it like working with Kevin and riffing with him?
I love Kevin. He's a fantastic guy. And we did a lot of things actually back in our studio as well through the years with Elmo. And you know, you remember the Tickle Me Elmo thing?
I have mine. I still have mine.
It was one of the first, maybe the first time that we could feel the influence of the show because it sold out and nobody could get one, and we had them and we were able to give them to, you know, people. And it was a crazy time. They just couldn't make them fast enough.
My mom tells me this story about how she had to like trample people to get mine.
Oh my God. Thanks, Mom. Sorry. She didn't get hurt.
Still have mine in the back of, and he still works after all this time. But yeah.
That's great. I'm so happy.
But that Sesame Street show, that was such a cool crossover because you guys were going into their world a little bit.
It was sort of like what we did on The Nanny too. We did a shoot on an episode of The Nanny, which I still get residuals for the theme song because it played on The Nanny. And of course, The Nanny is syndicated worldwide. It's always on somewhere. And so when our episode pops up, ka-ching, I get like, you know, 3 cents. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a fun thing.
So were there any adjustments that had to be made with like the puppeteers and working directly with, you know, down on the floor like that? Do you remember anything with that?
I don't really. I mean, we had the Muppets. We had had, because on our show, we did the gamut of entertainment. And I was sort of oddly familiar with that. I, you know, as a kid, I was a puppeteer. I had my dad built me a puppet theater in the basement. And so I was very aware of the mechanics of some of that, but to see them doing it as professionals was astounding. It was really fun.
Actually, I got that badge from a brilliant Sesame puppeteer, Joey Mazzarino, who I'm sure you know.
I know the name, but I don't know Joey.
His wife is Carrie Butler.
Oh wow, cool.
So when, as soon as I brought up Rosie, he's like, I have something for you that you might.
Oh, that's so cool. Carrie and I worked on Broadway together and Catch Me If You Can.
That show did not get much. I mean, it got acclaim, but I wish it did more. Catch Me If You Can.
So do we, Bob. So do we. We were in the summer and it was going great. And we thought, okay, we'll at least be here until Christmas. And we got word in August that we were going to close in a couple of weeks. The lead producer, God rest her soul, didn't believe that the show could make it through the fall. And I was on stage. I don't know if you remember, if you saw it, but I was on stage with a live orchestra, and we would look out every day, every night, and it was full, and people were standing and screaming and really digging it. Like, it was a very unique show, and with some incredible talent, Aaron Tveit and Norbert Leo Butz and Carrie, and on and on and on.
And the cast album still lives on, people.
It's great. It came out great.
People still love it.
And people are doing it a lot. Amateur groups and schools. And, you know, it's being done a lot. It's a great thing. I saw the tour. I was out in L.A. working, doing something. I forget what. And the tour was coming through the Pantages. It was a non-equity tour. So it was a little shaky, but it was wild to sit and watch another big production of Catch Me. It was out of body, kind of.
So you're doing Double Duty, and you're doing Rosie, and then you're doing Annie Gets a Gun at the same time. Was that exhilarating yet tiring, yet all these adjectives that?
Yeah, I think it was exactly that. I mean, I wouldn't have had it any other way. It was such a terrific opportunity to get to put a show on Broadway that I had done in high school with one of the great scores of all time. Irving Berlin wrote the most beautiful score. It's hit after hit after hit. And because I had been in it in high school, I had a real fondness for it. I knew it pretty well. And so we got to sort of reimagine it. Peter Stone wrote a new book, and Graziella Danielle directed. And I did all the music arrangements with, you know, creating things on Bernadette Peters. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
No.
And Tom Wopat, who was great. I mean, the entire company, it was joyous. So, yes, I was doing Rosie every morning. And then when we would rehearse the show in New York, down at West Beth in the Village. So I would run from the show. We'd end at 11, boop, and then I was free to go. And I would run downtown, and we'd rehearse the show till 6. And then I'd have dinner, go to sleep, get up, do it again. Then we went to Purchase, New York, SUNY Purchase, where we teched the show. So I was same thing. I'd get up there for most of the tech rehearsal, stay this time staying until like 11 p.m., then getting home, getting much less sleep, getting up, doing Rosie, going back up to Purchase. That went on for like 10 days. So then then we went out of town to the Kennedy Center for the out-of-town tryout before Broadway, just to get all the kinks out and make sure everything was working well. We made a lot of changes at the Kennedy Center, but similarly, I would do Rosie from 10 to 11. Well, rehearsal would be 7:20 every morning. Actually, it switched to 7:25. I got 5 more minutes of sleep in the latter years. But so we do the show 11 o'clock, hop in a car straight to LaGuardia, take the shuttle to Washington, D.C., hop in a cab, go to the Kennedy Center, be there for rehearsal all afternoon, watch the show, quick taxi back to LaGuardia, take the last shuttle back to LaGuardia, back home, sleep, wake up, do Rosie. And that was 2 weeks of that. And I mean, I was in my 30s, so I could, you know, I made it. And also, it was, as you said, the first word you said was exhilarating. And that's exactly right. It was, I was like, this is the greatest. I'm on this fun, crazy TV show, getting to do music with Elton John and everybody else. And then going off to the Kennedy Center to prepare this Broadway-aimed revival of Annie.
I mean, it was one of the two first cast albums that I bought because of seeing the performance on Rosie. That and Susical. Those were the two that kind of got me hooked.
Yeah, those are two good ones for sure. Two great scores.
I mean, I just love how much of a champion you all were for theater.
Yeah, I mean, it was from the heart.
But was there ever a show that you saw that you were like, I wish with all this publicity that it did more, because the way you guys promoted a show was unlike anything I'd ever seen.
And it doesn't happen to this day like that, actually. I was a big fan of a show called Sideshow.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with Alice Ripley and Emily Skinner, written by Bill Russell and Henry Krieger. And I just fell in love with it. I saw it. I went to the opening. I used to get invited to all the openings. So did Rosie, of course, because they wanted us to talk about the show. So if I couldn't go to the opening, I had an open invitation to come anytime to see things. But I did go to the opening Sideshow. It blew me away. It blew my hair back. I thought, oh, my God, this is thrilling theater. And I went back to see it again in the middle of the run. And then I went to the closing. Sadly, just a few months later, it closed way earlier than I ever thought it would. And I wasn't alone in that. But, you know, it's Broadway is about getting butts in seats. And if the people don't come, you can't run to an empty house. I think for them, they never surmounted the idea of the Siamese twins. I think it turned a lot of people off, you know? And I think people just, on some level, just were like, oh, I think that's a little heavy for me or whatever. But it was beautiful. It was beautiful. I love it. And I'm working with the lyricist of Sideshow now on a hopefully Broadway-bound version of Brave New World that we've been working on for years. And things are beginning to fall into place a little bit. I have to stay a little cryptic because who knows what's going to happen. But we're excited and hopefully, you know, to bring that show to New York some month or year soon.
Perfect. So something that means a lot to me is diversity and inclusion. And that's kind of baked into the work that you do in many different aspects. So what does it mean to you?
Listen. Everybody needs to be seen. You know, I had such a good time recently seeing a show on Broadway called How to Dance in Ohio.
I want to see that.
You will love it. It's beautiful. It takes place. It lives in the world of autism. And there are seven autistic actors on some level of the spectrum who are playing the leads in the show. And they're functioning, but they are, you know, audiences are going and let's say you have an autistic niece and she gets to see herself on a Broadway stage and it's extraordinary. It's so beautiful. I really highly recommend it to everybody. And I hope they can make it through the winter because this is historically January and February are the two really difficult months to make it through. So hopefully enough people will go. I can't say enough good things about it. But it's important, you know, it's the way it should be.
That's why I do what I do, because most times people in my predicament are similar, don't have unique voices advocating for them. So that's really what I try to do with this kind of indirectly.
It's so important. That's great.
Because I never saw myself on television as a kid. I never saw myself in musicals, in popular culture. And if we were the butt of the joke.
Yeah, that's no good. That's like the man in the dress, problem. We still see that happening on Broadway and some big musicals. And that's like the big joke, but it's sort of not funny anymore.
We're
slowly progressing, but it's glacially slow as far as I'm concerned.
I look at someone like Ally Stroker.
I'm glad you brought her up because I was just thinking about her.
That was such a triumph. And
oh, brilliant.
So talented. And I've been following her since she was on a reality show, The Glee Project.
Right.
And just to see that type of visibility was so important. But 100%. One of the things that I always say is if we do get any type of inclusion, in mainstream media, we're lucky that it lasts a couple seasons or a movie or time on Broadway, and then it goes away until the next thing.
Yeah.
It needs to be consistent.
I know. But we need more of it. We need more all the time. Because that visibility is what allows people to say, oh, I can do that, or, you know, I want to do that.
And you've been doing stuff for, you know, Playbill Pride, and I mean, yeah, just inclusion within all areas, within all types of voices. It's just so important that these voices get heard and they get highlighted.
Right. Supported and, you know, and put out there. Yeah, it is important. 100%.
So I kind of want to turn the table. Do you have any questions for me about my life or my line of work? We're just meeting for the first time, but is there anything you'd like to know?
Gosh, I don't know. I'm thrilled that you got to go, that you've seen some of these shows on Broadway. I'm really glad that you, get in and do that. And our connection to the Patchogue Theater is wonderful. How often do you get to go to see a show? How much do you go?
It's really not that often anymore because my travel is limited because accessibility with vans and getting there. But I try to go every couple months if that.
Good. Good. And of course, you are like me and you're home a lot streaming incredible stuff. There's so many good shows. I don't even know.
Yeah.
I was at dinner the other night with people and they were saying, oh, have you seen this or have you seen that? And I'm like, it's on my list, but there's so many.
Yeah, so much to do. There's so much to watch.
So much great content.
Back to Rosie a little bit. I've been binging Mary Tyler Moore.
Oh, that's pretty wonderful.
From the beginning. And to talk to people, like especially people of my generation, they don't know what came before, what shaped what we watch now.
Right.
And Mary Tyler Moore was really the catalyst of the woman lead role on TV the way we see her now.
Right. That's true. And Mary produced that.
Yeah. You know,
she, what a great career she had. That show is wonderful. I just saw a little clip on some, I think it was a meme on my phone of Betty White talking about the taping of that last episode. Have you seen the last episode?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I don't want to give it away. Spoiler, but she was talking about how they were such a family. They had become so close. And that there had been a decision made to do the last season. And they were all like, what? It's going so well. It's going so great. It's kind of like Rosie or Carol Burnett or other, amazing shows that decide to go out on top instead of lingering and then being like less popular, you know? So Mary said, this is what we're going to do. So she walked in to the first day of the last season and she said, everybody, oh, this is the first table read of the first show of the last season. And then that sort of went on the whole season and they were all kind of making fun, but also kind of getting it. But then it came time for the last episode and they were all such a wreck through the whole thing. And then at the end of the taping, they had to go back and do pickups, which were little, just fixing little bits or camera shots.
Yeah. Or whatever.
They were all still crying through the whole thing.
Because a family was built, and I'm sure I know that you know exactly what that's like, being on Rosie.
Do I ever? Because every theater production is like that, and certainly our television show. I remember the final wrap party for the Rosie O'Donnell show so clearly because it was surreal. It was like, how am I not going to see these people, you know, again? And then a few years later, there's a thing called Facebook. And all of a sudden, oh, look, there's Mimi. There's, you know, all the different people who used to work on the show, lighting and directing and producers and my band. So there is kind of, we have, back then we didn't have that. We sort of had AOL chat rooms, I guess. And
yeah,
that's about it. But So I have been able to keep in touch with people. We did a 20-year reunion, which was very exciting a number of years ago, and 30 is coming up. So stay tuned.
I'd love to be there for that.
Oh, I'd love to be there for that too.
Yeah, well, you kind of have, you kind of have a way in.
Yeah, I have a little bit of an edge on that one, but yeah, we'll see what happens. I think all the time, wouldn't it be fun if Rosie and I went and did like, you know, some kind of a reboot or some kind of a,
or a tour,
something, or yeah, I mean, I don't know. We're still in touch, and she's,
that's awesome.
She's pretty great.
I wanted to talk to you. This is very inside baseball and very specific.
Okay, that's all right.
So there are many different variations of the Rosie theme song. There was a point in time where you guys tried to be a little trendy and a little hipper and make it more funky, and then it got switched.
That's funny. I had forgotten about that, Bob. I'm glad you brought that up. So the genesis of the theme song was that Rosie said, you know, would you write it? I'm like, sure, I'll write it. But I was thinking to myself, I don't know how to do that. But I always said that about getting the job in the first place. I don't know how to be a band leader on TV. But I plopped myself down on her couch the first day we were all in the offices. And I said, now, what do you want me to do? And she said, just do what you do. And I thought, oh, my God, that's the best direction, because I'll just do it. And that's what we did. We just did it. But the theme song came to me in about 10 minutes. I'm not even kidding. It was like from above, like just threw me into, yeah. And so, and that theme song, you know, built my swimming pool. I mean, it was like, it was really lucrative and wonderful because hello, we played it every day.
And so, different versions of it.
Every season we changed the words. We went back into the studio and re-recorded, you know, funny things, and they changed the animation. But you're right, we did, like, was it season 3 or 4 or something? I think they were like, let's change it up, let's make it hip or something, and we made it a little bit.
People were complaining, and you guys referenced that in the
in the show.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, so then we went back because, you know, what. It was so sort of vintagey anyway. What's the problem? It sort of fit the show.
It was more kind of soulful and R&B, and that didn't really.
Yeah. I'm going to have to try to find that online. I wonder if it's findable. We'll have to look.
Well, Rosie's been posting.
I know.
Episodes.
I know. And I can't bring myself to watch.
And I've been watching them every day.
Oh my God. I think it's because, all right. So who was it? I just was seeing doesn't like to, oh, Patti LuPone was doing an interview and she was talking about how she doesn't listen to her cast recordings because she's not a big fan of her voice and of herself. And Cher had just said the same thing because she, you know, she had that big Christmas song and she's had like a top number one hit and
set album or
something. Oh my God, crazy. So I can't stand to watch myself on the show because, you know, it's me younger and I'm just a little bit like, I don't know. I can't really watch it, but I know she's been posting these episodes because I hear about it all the time.
Yeah.
It's funny.
But it's so funny. It's like, I'm watching it and I'm like, You reference the old theme song or the new theme song in the theme song. Like the self-referential humor.
Yes. Nothing was sacred and we had no shame. And we just put it out there and tried to be as real as we could be, you know, because I think an audience can smell if it's not real. And we all, and that's why I think she wanted to have me as the band leader, because we already had a connection. I used to be, when she was in Greece on Broadway and I was in the orchestra pit, I would always try to make her laugh, like and which was pretty easy to do because she wasn't like a method act or anything. She was just, you know, trying to get through it 8 times a week. So we had a connection from the start that you can't make up. It's just like what I was saying about old friends. it's you can't fake it. And if she brought in somebody who she didn't know, they would have never developed that first section of the show that we referred to as Chuffa, just the talking part. And the what did you do last night? And oh my gosh, can you believe this? And I thought she was hysterical, and every single laugh was real. Although I think a lot of people thought I was sort of like not, I was over laughing or whatever, but honestly, that was real. That was, nothing happened that wasn't real on that show.
It's really kind of interesting that you bring that up, because the show was lighthearted, but throughout the show's run, there were these moments that you couldn't predict.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one moment I wanted to talk to you about was Tom Selleck.
Yeah. That's where that was a sort of a turning point. Certainly the first time things had gotten really kind of heavy. And I can't remember how it came down, but I guess the segment producer had said, oh, we're not going to talk about that. Don't worry, or whatever. And then it started to come out and started to happen on live TV. So you can't, you know, once it's out the door, you can't pull it back in again. But yeah, that was deep. And I was proud of her for standing up for what she believes. And she's always been like that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think about that, and I think about being a 4-year-old watching that and even realizing then, like, I was always kind of older in my, I mm-hmm. knew when things weren't right and when I could read into that. Same thing with 9/11. I was 6 years old, but living in New York and having my school nurse's husband pass away in the fire in the tower. It's like you grew up fast when stuff like that happens.
True.
So
yeah,
you guys were always taking care of your audience. That's why the show worked for someone my age or older.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't ignore the stuff that was happening. Columbine was another big one that really pushed Rosie's buttons and really, really got to her and sparked her emotions in a way that was very real. And those were tough moments, but we didn't shy away from them. We didn't pretend like they weren't happening.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll probably edit this out, but I have something for you. I dug it up.
Oh my gosh, I'm scared.
Watch out! Here comes Rosie. Now it's time for the show. She's here and there and everywhere. With some folks you want to know.
Hey lady, I got your pie, eh?
There's Crafts and Laughs. It's Cool-O-Rama.
We got kids and stuff to do.
Family fun and tips for mamas.
Great big stars and maybe you.
Look out, dude, wipe out.
Put on your brakes, sit down, get cozy.
And hang out with Rosie.
Ready on your mark, get set, let's go. It's the Rosie O'Connell Show.
OMG.
See, that's the version that was changed back.
But not for long, right?
Yeah.
Do you know who the sort of lead singer is on that?
No, I don't.
It's Billy Porter.
Oh my God.
I know. Listen again. Not with me, but listen again. And I had not. Boy, that doesn't seem to hold together very well either. It seems like it's just really, really disjointed and weird.
I'm going to text you right when I listen. Holy crap. Okay.
It's Billy Porter, who I saw recently. You know, his star has risen to great heights. And I ran into him down here in South Florida recently, just by chance. And we just fell out laughing, like, oh my God, I can't believe I haven't seen you in such a long time. It was just wonderful. It was really great.
One of my biggest advocates is a guy by the name of Peter Zizzo, who really discovered Billy and kind of produced his first album. And
oh, cool.
So it's like we're kind of in touch too. And I, when Billy gets a free moment from his meteoric rise,
yeah,
I would love to talk to him one day. I feel like we'd have a good chat.
You would. He's a great, great guy. I love him so much. I've known him since the 80s, Bob. What?
And crazy. When you met him at that audition, did you expect any of this from him?
Maybe, yeah. But, you know, he had such a hard time in the, you know, between now and then, where he just could not get to the place where he could really be his authentic self. And he tried and tried and was told no and told no again. And then another door slammed. And he really, he has grown into the time, and the time it has been ready for him. I mean, all of that stuff, you know. And I'm just so happy that he's able to be his authentic self out in the world, because that's what he dreamt about.
You know, when you're an outcast and you're really trying to find your way, it's always the best for creative people to hear these stories and be allies for,
yeah,
because there's a lot of crossover with the LGBTQ side of things and the disability side of things. Because, I mean, for example, I just got engaged this past June. And,
oh my God, congratulations.
And I don't know if you know this, but my fiance and I, we legally can't get married because they will cut our disability benefits in half.
What? That's so disheartening to hear.
And it's because once we're married, we're not two separate people. We're a unit.
I can't even comprehend that, Bob.
So it's like there's so much progress, but then there's so much discourse within
red tape.
Not to bring it down, but
no, I'm glad to know about it. I'm surprised and kind of shocked to hear that. But, you know, we need to talk about that. We need to understand what that, and if that's a vestige of an old rule or something that is just not, you know, because it can't be, it doesn't sound right.
It's not. And when I heard about it, I was like, no way. Okay. Because we've had to fight through things. I had to fight through things my whole life.
Right.
Just to make it in this world. And it's like, here's another thing to work through. And it's like, I mean, it's crazy, but.
Sorry to hear that.
But on a lighter note, I really appreciate you, you know, hearing my story and us talking. I think I made a new friend today. And
That makes me feel good. Me too.
And so what are some of your goals for this new year? I mean, you've spoken about some projects, but is there anything that you want to do more of or work hard on? Or
I feel like I just want to keep going. I do not ever see myself retiring, although I'm going to be 63 next month, which I can't believe is true, but you know, I feel like I've earned it in a way. So all the things like Social Security and pension, all these things start to be like ideas. But I still am working a lot and enough that I don't need to begin to take my pension yet. I'm going to let it build a little bit more, I think. But because I can't imagine being retired, I can't imagine just going to the market and walking on the beach and watching TV. And I mean, I love my work. I love doing live music and traveling. I mean, I don't love the actual flying too much anymore. Although when I do these Playbill cruises, which are one of my great joys of my life, because music and travel are my two very favorite things, and food. So food is below, but travel and music are way up here. And so when I get to do these Playbill cruises, we travel all around the world. A couple of months, we're going to the South Pacific for 2 weeks with a bunch of great Broadway stars. And so, oh, I'm off track thinking about Bora Bora. Let me get back on track. So I just love what I do. And I am so grateful that I get to do what I do in all these various iterations. And making my living doing music. Even in high school, I was playing Friday and Saturday night in a cocktail bar with a friend who's still a friend to this day, Cindy. She sang, we sang together, and and I played. And so I was, even in high school, making my living doing music. I've never had to do, I'm knocking wood here, never had to do anything else besides music. And the fact that I can continue to do it and it brings me great joy is an embarrassment of riches. It really is.
Well, you have enriched my life in so many ways and have always been a mainstay and always have some, I have always been somebody that I've always wanted to talk to, just because you, I feel like one of your main goals in life, and correct me if I'm wrong, is just being kind.
It's not, yes, 100%.
It's not that hard, and kindness needs to be exuded everywhere we go, and you are really one of the voices I look to for that, because even when things were tough on Rosie, you always kept it light. You and Rosie were hiding your own, you couldn't be yourself.
Right.
But you still exuded this light that we all needed.
That's great. Yeah, you brought up a good point, because when we were doing the show, we were told by the Warner Brothers suits to not bring up our sexuality. Like it was a no-no. It was like, you cannot talk about your private life. Nobody wants to hear about that. It was a long time ago, weirdly. I think the world was ready for it, because soon after Ellen came out and Will and Grace, and you know, things started to happen, but we were absolutely not supposed to talk about it. And it was weird, because I had been gay my whole life. I still am completely comfortable with that. But we were just at that time, right before it was, and I think they were just afraid that Housewives Across America would click us off and didn't want to watch. But everybody who was watching kind of knew anyway.
Kind of knew, yeah.
I mean, I feel like, how could you? It's like when people used to think Liberace wasn't gay. It's like, well, look at him. I mean, what are you talking about?
People always say Rosie was the gayest show on TV without.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was authentic. And we joked about it all the time. And, you know, we live to tell the tale, Bob.
I think about when you guys had the cast of Will and Grace on, and you're talking about all of this character, that person gay, and meanwhile you can't expose yourself.
Well, I don't think Will and Grace had started when we were on, had it?
I'm 98.
Did was it?
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I had the history wrong. I thought it was on after us. But yeah, if that's true, then yeah, that's the way it was right to the end. Although she did come out, you know, late in the run.
I remember that. Yeah.
2001 maybe. So that we sort of, that happened, but it was certainly not in the beginning.
Where can people connect with you? Where can people find you? Where can people see your adorable dog and your family?
Yes. My dog is here on my lap sleeping. Do you want to say hi to Bob? Do you want to say hi? Look, look.
Hello.
That's Clarence. He's 11 and he's my beautiful boy.
If you're ever here in Long Island again, I'd love to see you guys.
Oh, great. We would love that too. But you're asking me where can people find me? My favorite thing, because I have a music page on Facebook, John McDaniel, and you can find that. But Instagram is my favorite. I have really come to love posting photos from different travels and concerts, and yes, my dog. My Instagram handle is JohnMcD123. Pretty easy.
And there's also some political tint to.
Oh yes, I can't help it. We're living in a crazy world. I'm sure you've noticed. And this year is really important that we get people out to vote who don't normally vote. Those are the ones who need to step up and say, this is not okay. We are America. We're better than this. And that has to happen.
Also, you're a big fan of using the Instagram music feature.
Sometimes.
Including a soundtrack.
Yep.
The typical John McD thing to do.
Sort of. Yes, I do like that. I do. I made a funny little end of the year post. I guess it's called a reel. I don't know. I'm old. I just do the best I can, but
I'm young and I don't know what I'm doing. So you're good.
I just plugged in 12 different little quick video clips into this template that they had. And it came out really well and really good. Now I don't know where it goes. I don't think it's in my collection of things I've posted. Maybe it stays in my reels. I don't know. If I find out, I'll let you know. But, you know, we just go on and do our thing, right?
Thank you so much for this.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. And I appreciate all of your listeners. And so nice to have a chat with you, Bob. It was really great.
Before we go, we have to give a shout out to our friend Harvey Brownstone for connecting us.
Yes, I appreciate Harvey so much.
Because I told him that I wanted to talk to you, and he kind of got that going, and I appreciate that.
I love it too.
Thanks for hanging out with us at the DJ Bob Show. If you liked this episode, drop us a line at djbobrunkel@gmail.com. That's djbobrunkel@gmail.com. Let us know what you liked most about this episode and what other guests we should have on the DJ Bob Show. Thanks so much again for hanging out with us. This is Nate Beagle, your humble announcer.